Hello, listeners. This is Darren, and welcome to another episode of The Criterionist. A look at the Criterion Collection, one spine number at a time. This is episode 50, the Big 50, and we're going to look at spine number 50, which is Federico Fellini's And the Ship Sails On, from 1983. Just so you guys know, this is a podcast where I will just spoil the film. I'll just talk about everything and anything in it. So just make sure you watch it or just proceed with caution. It's worth watching, I think. So yeah, go watch it first and then come back and listen. So yeah, let's get into the film. The plot, I guess. The plot is basically these rich, sometimes mostly like music-filled people, like opera singers mostly, and the conductors and etc. Are on this boat that's traveling to these islands to spread the ashes of this famous opera singer who has died. And basically it's a Fellini film, not a big plot, but a lot of characters doing their own thing and feeling all kinds of emotion. This is all told through the narration, not just narration, but a actual character who looks into the camera and tells us all about who's who and what's going on. Orlando, played by Freddie Jones, really good performance. This guy's funny. He's right for the part. He's a funny guy. He's like a journalist who's covering the whole funeral, which is almost a little odd, but yeah, he's great. He narrates to us, and basically we meet a bunch of people who are off to attend a funeral on a boat. There's a few here. I tried to find the names. It's a little hard because it's in a different language. There's Kafari, who seems to be like the successor of the person who died, Edma. And she's pretty down. I feel like the whole movie. There's Futielto, it's the big bearded singer, he's a goofy guy. He's feeding birds at the beginning of the movie, who are sitting outside the dining room. He sings a lot, there's a few characters who just sing to show off. This guy's like the biggest one. Then there's Dongbi. Dongbi and, well, Reginald and Violet Dongbi, who are like this strange married couple. Reginald is clearly a homosexual, and Violet is kind of like sleeping around with whoever she wants, even though they're married. It's a very strange situation. There's the Duke and his deaf sister, or was it blind? I wrote deaf, but it's blind. I don't know why I wrote deaf. And then there's this Bassano. I don't know quite what he actually does, but he's clearly in love with the deceased. He has a whole shrine dedicated to her on the boat. This takes place back in 1914, I believe. So he's watching video, but he has to crank the projector, so he's just watching video of her, and cranking the the projector, just constantly watching. He's a strange character as well. Fellini is great at his characters, I think. Last episode way. Knights of Cabiria, bunch of great characters in that, especially the main character. Omricord, which is more like this movie, just a bunch of people doing their own thing, kind of like Robert Altman, kind of a Robert Altman type film. This is more like that. It's I like it a lot. Hey, I said spoilers. Eventually, they pick up some Serbians who are, I think they either escaped or they're, I think they escaped or they just, they were prisoners or something. And now they're on the boat. The captain has saved them from being out on sea. At first, our rich group and the clearly poor, the Serbians are like dirty, their clothes are raggedy. Obviously, they've been on sea for a long time. They don't get along. Not like the Serbians, like, I don't want to be with the rich people. But the rich people are like, oh, these people kind of, like, they kind of stink. They're dirty. I don't really want them on our boat. And there's too many of them. I don't want them, like, sharing rooms with us. I like my space. But eventually they get along through this great scene where the Serbians are playing music and everyone just starts dancing. It's fantastic. That's the plot. This is a great film. I'll get into what I thought about it, I guess. It's funny, kind of like Omricord. This seems to be what people sometimes describe movies as, spiritual sequels to Omricord. I think Omricord was more personal to Fellini, but this is just another filled with characters, filled with a sadness, but also like really funny. There's this when Orlando first talks into the camera, he starts saying, "Now here's where we are." And then the waiter comes over. He's in the dining hall, and a waiter comes over and says, "Oh, sir, can you move for a second? You're in the way, like you're in the way of the other waiters." And so he has to move Fellini finds this great shot of like the dining hall and the beautiful background. And then Orlando has to move and he's like by a staircase and he's like scrunched in almost. And it's not as good looking. It's a funny joke. It's odd, like Fellini often is, immediately breaking the fourth wall and then breaking some sort of other wall with like, "Oh, sir, can you move while you narrate to the audience?" It's great. There are several other funny scenes. Most of them, including Orlando, there's the Duke is on the ship, the Grand Duke, and he's fencing, and then Orlando comes in and tries to interview him, but they don't speak the same language, so there's a translator, but the translator starts speaking for the Duke, which confuses other people, and so Orlando's just eventually just like not talking anymore, and there's just words being thrown around trying to figure out what the Duke is saying, and like there's a metaphor of confusion. It's very funny. And there's a rhino in this movie, a lovesick rhino, just a depressed rhino who eventually starts to smell really bad, and so they have to lift him up almost on like a crane thing and just spray him off, which makes it smell even worse for a few hours, I guess. And then there's this amazing scene, which I don't understand at all, but they go down to the kitchen and there's this guy, this opera singer. I think Orlando, when he's introducing all the characters, he says it's the deepest voice in all of wherever they are. But he's like, "All right, well, guys, watch this." He's like, "I need a chicken." Puts the chicken up, starts singing in his deep voice. And you're like, what is going on? He keeps hitting, he keeps singing, and then eventually the chicken just falls asleep, and then everyone's like, wait, what? And then Orlando there is on the ground. He fell asleep too. And he's like, wow, that was amazing. He gets up. Wow, that was amazing. So yeah, the humor is great in this film. I'll say this right now before I forget. This movie is over 2 hours. And it flew by. Sometimes movies are just like, okay, this is good, but is it like, how do I still have an hour left? Too long, too not paced well enough, I guess would be, or maybe I was just in the right mood. But this movie flew by. It was amazing. I guess I'll blame Fellini, who makes great movies, but. Yeah, I wasn't ex I guess since it's a decade after Omricord, and by statistics of what people think of other people's movies when after they age quite a bit, I would guess that this movie wasn't gonna be very good. It would just I know it's on the Criterion Collection, which doesn't mean it's going to be great. Blood for Dracula, the second Samurai movie stinks. Sid and Nancy, has not grown in me at all. It's just lowered in my appreciation for it. But this one is fantastic. It's a lot of fun. And then it gets to the more political stuff with the Serbians and kind of the race. I guess I'll get into that with themes, but the kind of like the racism and then how easy it could be to just forget racism and join in with just love of fellowship, of community, of music in the scene. It's very good. So yeah, I'll talk a little bit about the ending right now. So the movie starts, just before I get to that, the movie starts kind of shot. It must have been shot or in post, like something must have been done. It looks like it was filmed in 1914. It's all grainy. It looks like a silent movie. We don't hear anything. We just see people. We don't hear any words. We barely hear any music, and then it slowly comes in and in the color, in the sound, into a score. There's a few hints of it. The music starts to play. It sounds like music of the time. There's the boat horn, that comes in, which in some silent films I've seen. They do that, they make that noise, even though there's no talking, they make a familiar noise to know the boat is blasting its horn or a car is honking its horn. Then the music comes in and the ashes of the deceased person are being brought on the boat and people start singing. I'm not quite sure what they're singing, but it's most likely a song that to honor the dead who was brought on the boat at that moment, and it fades into color, and everything it becomes a modern movie, I guess. But then some crazy stuff happens. They have to they do the funeral, but a battleship is threatening them to give back the Serbians that they had captured that escaped, I think. But yeah, the battleship lets them do their funeral and then demands for their Serbians back. Orlando, the narrator, he kind of says, I wish that I could tell you we stood our ground and demanded fought for their freedom, which cuts to a scene of them trying, of them singing. There's lots of singing in the movie. This one's kind of a little odder because they're singing like, "No, don't take them." It's kind of, I think the lyrics are literally, not literally, but literally just like, "Don't take them, we're going to keep them, fight for their freedom," something like that. But then they get on the boat, the reality sets back in, and they get on the boat to be rowed to the battleship, given back, so the Duke isn't hurt, or the boat of rich people aren't hurt. But then one guy we've been seeing kind of fall in love with this young girl, through like looks and dancing, throws a grenade, and then it goes back to Orlando, and he's kind of telling us, like, "Oh yeah, someone threw a grenade or something went off, and it made the gun go off. Either they shot us or someone threw it. No one really knows what happened, but we got shot." So he's saying this in his room while changing into a swimsuit. Then it goes back. No, actually, then it cuts to the crew. Not the crew of the boat, but the film crew. It backs away, shows the boat kind of on hydraulics, and that's how it tilts back and forth. It goes to like the guy watching, you know, you got the boom mic, you got the camera, you got people playing with technology. I'm not sure what it all was, but it does that, and that's an odd moment. It feels odd. But then it goes back into the film. It goes back into the silent frame. It looks like a silent movie again, but the guy's still talking. I think he's still talking. Can't quite remember now. But I think he is, and he's in a rowboat, and he's like, "Oh, by the way, most of the people you knew, they made it. Most of them. And, yeah, everyone's pretty much fine." It's very strange. And then, of course, it gets even stranger, and he's like, "Only me and... But on this rowboat, only me and the rhino made it." Points to the rhino, and then like waves goodbye, and the movie ends. Not sure what the ending. I love the ending. I love the back away to show that it's just a movie. And then the oh yeah, everyone pretty much made it. This wasn't a movie where all your characters die. This is just a movie where terrible things happen to the people you barely knew. And now I'm on a rowboat with a lovesick rhino, and we're gonna go to safety. Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Yeah, just super odd. Yeah, I guess I'll get into the themes now. So there is a grieving theme. It seems like throughout the film, it's kind of how people grieve with someone, and all the types of different grieving. There's Bassano, who, again, I don't know what he does, but he seems like it's the grief from a fan's point of view. Like if a celebrity dies, like we lost Alan Rickman and David Bowie, and I didn't know either of them, but I'm grieving. I'm not as big as fans of them as this guy is. I don't have a shrine of Alan Rickman that you know of, but it's kind of like you barely knew her. They say he gave a rare rose to her every time. I get the impression he didn't know her very well. Maybe I'm wrong about that. He does seem to just admire her from afar, only giving her a rose every chance he gets, but not doing anything more than that. He does dress up as her at one point, and everyone thinks it's a ghost. Very strange. But yeah, that's his point of view. There's the Kafari, who, again, might be the successor, might just be a good friend, because she seems the most sad out of anybody. Bassano is sad, but in a more, like, creepy admirer way, a stalker way. This seems like Kafari, the woman who lost her friend, I guess, just seems like that, a person who lost a friend, like, actually knew this person. She is sad. She is, like, overreacting to things that you normally wouldn't react to, kind of because she's just in this state of extreme depression. Eventually, the dancing scene, she gets up. She doesn't fully go out and dance with someone, but she does get up and kind of move. It's a good scene. I like it. The dancing scene is incredible. Everyone's bonding. Everyone's having a good time. And then she's like, okay, I'll get up. I won't commit to dancing, but I will join in, even if it's for a few minutes. The other people don't seem too affected. There's a few that, you know, when they see the ghost, are like, oh my gosh, you're back, or you're come to haunt us. But most people, they start the trip, they eat, and then some of them go talk about what she was like, which is pretty normal for a funeral, or on your way, or like days before a funeral. Just go, oh yeah, remember when they did that? Remember when they did this? That's very funny, very weird of them. But then I think 3 days pass, and then they talk about her again, but they barely talk about her in between, except Bassano, who's the only one who, like, seems to really want to just always be mourning her. Yeah, so it's I guess relatable. Some people, I got the impression some people seem happy she's gone, because it's less competition. There is this awkward scene where the people who work in the bottom of the boat, the coal miners, I think, they're like, hey, sing for us. And there's like people who are like, oh no, don't make them sing. Come on, guys. And then the two men, I think it's the bearded guy and I think the husband of the deceased, they just start singing, but like in competition, like one after another. This is another scene where Kafari comes back from the grieving process, and she starts singing, but then the bearded guy sings over her and she has to sing louder. It's awkward. It's like, oh no, like just, they admire all of you. Just stop making it a competition. And again, it's kind of funny too, just because of how sad it is. But yeah, people don't seem to care. Some people are grieving, but gotta move on. And then some are just destroyed. It's an interesting look at a death, I guess. We barely get to know her, the deceased. She, all we really know is she was one of the best singers around, and that's really it. That's just an interesting look on a death. So yeah, I already talked about it a little bit. Another theme I saw is kind of like class systems and race. And racism, I guess. And, like, standing up for what's right. The dancing scene is easily probably the best scene in the movie. I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff in here, but yeah. Yeah, I don't think I need to talk about it that much. I already did. They don't do the right thing, and they give away the thing. No one really stands up for the Serbians, who have to go back and probably be tortured or die or locked up at least for a long, long time. Let's see. One thing I noticed about the movie, actually, I didn't notice it, but I heard somewhere, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this applies to the movie. So in the dining scene, when right after Orlando has introduced all the characters, which has one great scene where he's like, okay, he's like looking around like, okay, I got everyone, but who's this guy? And he's like, sir, who are you? And he's like, I'm a famous conductor. And he's like, okay, who's your friend over there? She's like, that's the world's greatest dancer. And it's very, again, another funny scene where he's like, I don't really know who you are. And the guy's like all offended. Like, I'm a pretty famous guy. This is a really famous dancer. I don't know why you don't know us. And he writes it down in his little book where he's reading from. But yeah, and after that scene, a bird flies into the boat, which is a fun foreshadowing because I heard that it was bad luck for a bird. It's bad luck for a bird to fly into inside. And it means death. Now, you could look at it as just someone has died. This is a trip to islands where she wants her ashes laid. It is a funeral. Or you can look at it as this boat is going to drown. It's going to get hurt and not exist anymore. And I think that's fun little foreshadowing. And yeah, I really liked it. It's a fun one. I can't believe how fast it went. I can't believe at all, really. I'm like, oh, we're already an hour in, and then the second hour passed, and I'm like, oh, that's the end of the movie. So that's what I thought about. And the ship sails on. I like the title too. A title that, yeah, just doesn't. It just maybe makes people a little mad because it starts at the end. I don't know. I like weird, strange, confusing titles. But yeah, the movie's good. So I think that's all I have to say. You can follow me on Twitter at Schmuck for a Life. And you can listen to my other podcast, The Rosebuds, which I co-host with my friend Andrew. It's an entertainment podcast. We talk about music, movies, TV shows, whatever we want, really. We're doing a series on Disney movies, just a long series. One of those will be coming out, but probably when this comes up, I think the rank all will happen, where we rank all the films we saw from last year. And then a whole episode dedicated to our top 10 or 15 movies. So that's a lot. That's a dumb idea, but a lot of fun. And you can also read my movie review blog, schmuckforlife.wordpress.com. A lot of fun stuff up there. Hateful Eight, Carol, Tokyo Tribe, if you haven't seen it, which could be a Criterion movie, maybe. I don't know. But yes, next week, next episode, I will have watched Terry Gilliam's Brazil, which is a movie that I haven't ever finished. I'll have to finish it this time. It's just strange that I can never make it to the end. I don't know if I like Terry Gilliam, if you listen to my Time Bandits episode. So I can't wait to finish this movie. I know the first time I watched it, the DVD skipped, and the movie could not finish. Then the second time, I think I might have fell asleep, but just odd circumstances. I can't wait to see what happens. I heard it's a crazy ending, so that's a lot of fun. Look for that next episode. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.